Okay, our next speaker is Paula Perez-Elman. She's an associate professor at the Desautels Faculty of Management at McGill University. Paula.
Hello. Thank you for inviting me to share in this discussion. And actually, it connects very nicely with the two previous speakers. Amazing coordination here. I want to expand a bit on the discussion of global standards as it relates to the building of local indigenous enterprises, what you call the local folks from our previous speaker. And I want us to think of how these standards interact with the building of their capabilities, and I want to put know-how at the center of standard processes. We can say that from the market access standpoint and from the possibilities of local enterprises or local farmers, local producers in developing economies, their possibilities of accessing markets, of course, are dependent on how they are competing with the kinds of products that they're producing. How are they improving their products? How do these processes of production, how they meet the expectations of the market, wherever, whether it's a local or international market? And one of the aspects that's extremely important from the standpoint of developing country enterprises is how do they upgrade their products in order to be more competitive in a global environment, and especially to connect to supply chains, which are, of course, as many of you know, an important feature of the organization of food production. And we can say that standards are very much at the center of coordinating market activity, of coordinating production activity, and if the product doesn't meet the standards, well, of course, there is just, you know, the market access is certainly not possible. Now, we're living in a world where there has been a multiplication of a proliferation of standards along many lines. We can talk about the one that has to do with food safety, which is our focus for this session, but obviously, as some of you have mentioned, there are the environmental ones, which are increasing, there are social ones. Again, focusing on the process of production. For producers in developing economies, as compared to the discussion that this takes in a Canadian context, of course, I think we can say highlight two types of challenges, or what I would call local gaps in relation to where we want to be, let's say from the standpoint of the global ideals, and where a large majority are. One of them, we can say it's a big difference, is where they are in relation to the technological frontier. Here, it's safe to say that when you talk about companies like Campbell, they're going to be pretty much at the forefront in terms of where the technology, where the technological know-how is for food production, compared to where local producers are, particularly in the more marginal areas, in the poorer areas, in the rural areas of developing economies, you're going to find that there is a big distance. At the same time, we're talking, particularly from the poorer groups' standpoint in the rural areas, that the economic and social context, of course, are very different from what we expect when we talk about food safety. I mean, when we talk about lack of potable water, lack of electricity, lack of sanitation services, etc. So this is just a way to sort of position ourselves in terms of these gaps are really what's, in a sense, preventing oftentimes the possibilities of being at the ideal where we want to be. And many of these norms, as I think Jürgen already outlined, are oftentimes established, of course, based on the norms of advanced economies, richer countries, and many of these, of course, are tied to their public health standards, which are very high to start with. So this is a challenge. At the same time, my argument here is that we can see that standards have embedded in them tremendous know-how tremendous technological information which goes beyond just simply equipment or what's obvious. And you mentioned science earlier. Well, we can say that a lot of these standards certainly have a lot of science know-how embedded in them. And we can see them as ways in which they can become intermediaries to circulate global know-how, in ways in which local knowledge in developing economies can connect with global knowledge that's wherever that knowledge is elsewhere, and how this can be used as a way to improve local knowledge, improve local practices. If we think of the concepts that are very central to food safety, such as innocuity, we can think certainly about the chemical, biological, physical, heating, you know, temperature, all of these issues that are certainly very much connected to issues of science and knowledge. So I'm going to argue that the more we foster this local knowledge building, and we use these standards as these intermediaries, there can be some tremendous possibilities for making improvements locally. And I want to give one example. This one is in the dairy agro-industry in a marginal rural area of Nicaragua in Central America. And it relates, the story is about the interaction between marginal producers that are lacking water and electricity and are low income, and their interaction with HACCP standards. Okay, I think most of you know the hazard analysis of critical control points, but certainly very much tied to all of these other food safety standards that have already been analyzed. And we could say that actually there the connection between risk and hazards and the burden of diseases are very interconnected. If you think of all the gastrointestinal disorders that are certainly tied to milk consumption in this context. Now, what's interesting here is that many of these local producers were engaged in a strategy of trying to connect and expand their opportunities locally as well as internationally in terms of developing new export products in international markets. And this red circle there refers to a cluster about of thousands of dairy producers that decide to, in a sense, upgrade and improve their production. Now, we could say that this is in Nicaragua that I'm going to explain, but actually there was a story last year in the New York Times looking at the situation of dairy farmers in China. And when we look at the picture there, we can say, well, it's pretty much the same picture. If we look at what do these rural farmers, what are the conditions in this area? So my point being that though I'm talking about an example from Nicaragua, I think it's a pretty typical example. Now, just briefly here, to give you a sense, when there is this engagement between local producers, local farmers, and a global standard that is different from the typical practice in the country that does not have actually public health regulations related to milk or dairy products. I want to do a quick contrast of what does it mean, you know, what was the local practice traditional versus this new practice that begins to emerge as they shift to the use of food safety standards. On the one on the left, basically, is one that you would typically associate with high bacterial levels or a lot of burden of diseases for the population. But basically, you're milking in very muddy corrals. You're using plastic containers. There is no water. There is no soap for washing containers, for washing hands. Cattle diseases are rampant, tuberculosis, brucellosis. There is no control. There are no extension services. There is milking of infected animals. They use chemicals to slow down decomposition that people are not aware are dangerous. There's no refrigeration tanks because there's no electricity. Again, there is no potable water. On the other side, and I'm talking here about a process that involved a shift that was guided by a move to engage with food safety standards, we have one where you begin to have cement corrals, stainless steel containers. Suddenly there is introduction of potable water. There is washing of containers and of hands. Microbiology and labs become central to a system where before there were no labs and no microbiology analysis. Testing of cattle diseases, new professions begin to develop. You avoid the use of dangerous chemicals and refrigeration and electricity obviously become part of the picture. So a lot of these issues are intertwined, where you have the upgrading suddenly of the local producers along with what we could say are processes also of general wider development and improvement for the local population of consumers, as well as for the ability of the local enterprises to survive and compete in an increasingly integrated economy. But what's important here is that we tend to think of standards mainly from the regulatory side, and particularly in the bodies where much of the standards are discussed at the government or multilateral organizations. Yet, when you take a look at this from the standpoint of who is having to change the practices, where is the practice having to be implemented, there is an issue that we don't pay enough attention to, which is how is this understanding developing at that local level on the ground, and particularly how do you get at the tacit elements that are not written simply on the norm or on paper or on the blueprint that a producer might receive, but it is why do I have to engage in this new practice? What does it mean, even understanding at the science that you're talking about? So it's not just simply the evidence, but the understanding of why is this evidence important, why is this connected to how I'm producing or the ways in which I'm doing it. And I mentioned the lab here because what's interesting is that most of the understanding of these producers as to why they needed to change their practices and improve them developed as evidence was being generated locally through the introduction of all these labs, which was not part of their typical practice. So more than standards, then, is how through practical experience at that local level, you begin to create that local evidence of what's the connection between this norm that is being required by the global markets and the way I'm producing, in the way in which I have been producing and drinking milk or eating cheese for decades or longer. So the issue is that we need to think of legislation beyond just the fact of the information to the practical elements and the tacit elements that are not written. The other thing that's actually very interesting too about this process is that as they shifted and as they were engaged with the new norms coming from the global market dynamics, let's say, in the global regulatory frameworks, there became also an increased interaction between these local producers and different organizations locally as well as internationally. So in a sense, you move from being isolated and marginalized to increasing your connections to local and international communities, whether that be foreign companies, whether that be NGOs that are providing all kinds of technical and financial assistance, government agencies that are also not at the forefront locally in terms of the notions of food safety that suddenly become part of the picture, the development of local universities to build the professionals that are necessary to have the veterinary services, to run the labs, to deal with cattle diseases. And all of these, a process of generating new connections with local and international organizations then leads to this emergence of networks that are supported through this emergence of new practices and new guided by the new standards. And I think that this is one aspect that we, again, don't think enough about. One is how do you produce a local understanding, but two, how is organizational dimensions supporting the shift to new standards? So this is area. So in conclusion, I just want to highlight the role of standards as intermediaries of that global and local knowledge circulation that is not obvious through the books and through the regulation that might receive. So the question is, how can one create the mechanisms and the conditions for that knowledge to circulate in practice at the local level? Secondly, the importance of fostering those local and global networks of support infrastructure that are going to make it possible to upgrade and to improve at the practices of production in the context, in the situated context in which these communities of producers live. And lastly, that ultimately what we're talking about when we want to see a change in an adoption of new ways of producing is about how do we build the collective competence? How do we build those collective capabilities? Because we're talking not just about one farm or one enterprise changing, but we're talking about thousands of farmers, thousands of enterprises changing. So there again, how do we support those processes of collective competence building at the local level? I'm going to stop there. Thank you.